Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the November NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it's their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
Sure. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Amir, could you call the roll, please?
Yes, Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Phil Malagia.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Rafael Medina Ferrara.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Cole Antoine Johnson. Joshua Weinrich.
Here.
Aaron Cruz from the Executive Branch.
Here.
Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Manuel Polino. But Justin Zimmerman, Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manira. We have three sets of minutes before us to approve today. I'm going to ask for one motion to approve all three. We have the October 9th regular board meeting minutes. We have the October 9th executive session special board meeting minutes. We have the October 30th special board meeting minutes. Does any board member have any questions or comments on any of the minutes?
Chair, Fred Dumont will make a motion.
It's good to hear a motion to approve, please.
Fred Dumont, Chair.
Fred, second.
Josh, second. Yep.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. I'll make some brief chairman's remarks this morning. We have a very full agenda to get through today. A couple of things up front. First of all, I want to remember that yesterday was Veterans Day. I'd like to acknowledge all of our veterans, both in general and certainly those among the many veterans here at the NJEDA, and thank you for your service. Secondly, I'd like to congratulate Governor-elect Mike Sherrill and Lieutenant Governor-elect Dale Caldwell on their election results last week. We at the EDA are excited to partner with the incoming Sherrill administration to advance our mission of supporting businesses, bolstering emerging industries, promoting innovation, and strengthening our communities in the state of New Jersey. The economic impact of New Jersey's arts and culture sector is vast, amounting to over $530 million in economic activity each year, supporting nearly 10,000 jobs and generating more than $116 million a year in state, federal, and local tax revenue. Throughout his time in office, Governor Murphy has recognized the economic potential of a thriving arts and culture industry. The NJEDA has made substantial investments to support public space activations, arts festivals, and cultural institutions across New Jersey, helping bolster the revitalization of main streets, creating jobs, and improving the lives of residents. In January, the NJEDA board approved the Cultural Arts Facilities Expansion CAFE program to support the development and rehabilitation of crucial institutions such as museums, performing arts centers, libraries, and galleries throughout the state. With $1.2 billion in state credit tax credit awards available for eligible projects, the CAFE program is the NJEDA's largest investment in the arts and culture sector to date, building on the success of phases one and two of the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation for Arts program, and the continued support of the annual North Shore Festival. Today, the board will consider the first tax credit awards under the CAFE program for major expansions and renovations of the Mayo Arts Performing Arts Center in Morristown, and the Liberty Science Center. NAO Arts Performing Arts Center, which has served as a cultural institution of Morristown for over 30 years, will add more than 31,000 square feet of new construction, including a new arts and education center, and restore the 46,000 square foot historic theater auditorium. The NJEDA's continued investments into industries crucial to the state's economic future, such as arts and culture, clean energy, and manufacturing, will expand economic opportunity for New Jerseyans, promoting sustainable economic growth in the Garden State for decades to come. We also have a meeting of firsts. We have our first NJ Feed Awards for food security, and we also have our first next NJ AI Award today. So lots of exciting things happening at today's board meeting. Now let me turn it over to Tim and Mary for the CEO's report.
Great. Thank you, Chairman. We have a really full agenda today. The chairman mentioned full list of blockbuster approvals, so I'll be briefer than normal. You know, October, November, continues to be a sort of a busy season for events and milestones. Mary and I and a number of our colleagues were together at University Hospital in Newark to break ground on the first phase of the, remember, Lodgy was there. The first phase of the transformation of University Hospital and the modernization of that campus, which Mary's been working on in various capacities for a long period of time, and Governor Murphy and the administration has been a huge supporter of, and beginning to write the next chapter in University Hospital's history. And it was a really special day. And then I happened to go that same afternoon and join Michelle and Ty and Jermaine and a number of other folks at Kane University for graduation for the Building for Growth program, which is one of our capacity building programs that we support through the Institute for a Competitive Inner City. Heard from a number of small businesses, including a small business that graduated from that program and having nothing to do with our involvement, won the contract to be the janitorial services provider for the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Center. It's being built around the corner, so helping local minority women-owned businesses get a shot at more contracts is the kind of capacity building investments we want to be making. We also continue to respond to conditions that are evolving. Obviously, the shutdown seems to be heading toward a conclusion this afternoon, House votes, but the impact that the SNAP shutdown had, which I will spend my editorialization about, but suffice to say that EDA did what it always tries to do, which is rise to the occasion and help where we can, and Tara in particular. I want to give a shout out to who was serving with me on the governor's task force on responding to this crisis. Deployed almost $1 million of emergency funding out to the six emergency food organizations across the state, dealing particularly with the challenge of Jersey Week and lots of schools being out and kids who expect to get, two meals a day from school, not being able to access those in addition to the SNAP challenges. So, and we'll hear more about food security as a theme in a few minutes from Tara when we get to the consideration of the feed approvals as well. So a lot going on, both sort of time-sensitive responding to things and then lots of, milestone approvals today for things like the Helix 3, or the third building of the Helix in New Brunswick, the Hoboken Hotel product that's been on the drawing boards for a long time, major awards at CAFE, which are our first application, so a lot going on. You can also see on our board dashboard, which I won't go through in great detail, but or really any details, just a tremendous amount of activity between these meetings, 32 approvals, for example, for the Angel Tax Credit Program, which is one of these more under-the-radar programs, but one of the bigger impact programs in the innovation and entrepreneurship space. So a lot going on. The governor has become a bit of a cliche to talk about the governor running through the tape, myself included, but he means it, and we're going to bring as much forward as we can to get as much done as we can under Governor Murphy's leadership. So, prepare the way, as the chairman said, for a smooth transition to a new of January. So with that, happy to take any questions or yield the floor back to you and get to the meat.
Any questions for Tim or Mary? Okay, hearing none, we're going to go to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting will be acknowledged to speak first in person and then by Teams, then by phone. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hands feature to be placed into a queue to provide comments. Each person will be acknowledged to speak in the order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star, then one, to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to provide comment. We will now go over the NJEDA public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time for all those who wish to speak. Related comments, documents, or printed materials may be attached to an email. Public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I'd now like to acknowledge any members of the public wish to make comments. Anyone in the room who would like to speak? Okay, seeing none, Danielle, can we see if there's anyone on Teams who would like to speak?
I see a couple of hands raised. One of them is a board member, so I don't know if Maciel is intentionally having her hand raised or not. And the other one is Julia Taylor.
Good morning. This is Julia. Should I go ahead or no?
Please go ahead.
Sure.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Julia Taylor with the American Graffiti Museum in Trenton. And just a question about the CAFE program. In my experience with many different funding programs that are competitive with applications due at one time, decisions are often announced at one time. So I was curious if there's any additional information about the timeline and process for when round one CAFE applicants will be considered by the board. Thank you.
Hey, Julia, it's Tim. Happy to follow up with you offline on the specifics of anything with your application. The short answer is they're not all being decisioned at once. You'll have a couple for consideration in a few minutes, but that does not mean that the others have been decisioned yet. They're proceeding to the board when they're ready, which varies project to project. So happy to follow up and chat with you, have the team chat with you about the particulars of your application.
Anybody else on Teams have any questions?
Yes, I actually have my hand raised.
Sorry, please identify yourself.
Yes, my name is Sidi Medina.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I apologize. We had thought you were a different individual. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm not a board member. That would be a heck of an elevation. First and foremost, I'd just like to thank everyone, chair, the members of the board, of what you do. Also, the opportunity to provide an update on the Equal Space Equity and Innovation Hub in Newark. For any who don't know, Equal Space was awarded the NJEDA support to create a tech and innovation hub to anchor inclusive growth in our city of Newark. It is meant to be the intersection of small business and entrepreneurship. The project remains fully aligned with the NJEDA's mission and with the state's broader vision for equitable economic development. I wanted to just go on record just to say that over the past year, however, we've encountered some significant challenges that have impacted our ability to move forward on the original timeline. The first being the deferred disbursement of the project has created a domino effect, one that I stated in a prior in-person meeting at your headquarters in Newark. Which then, really put a hamper on construction and build-out scheduling and contractors and architects. And we were placed on hold for a project that is now live in phase one, awaiting the release of those funds. The domino effect has led to a secondary challenge, which is the designated landlord and developer has defaulted on their delivery of the obligations, preventing the execution of the lease and delaying the site readiness. While these circumstances were beyond our direct control, they have put the project momentum and associated investment at risk. I wanted to say Equal Space has done the responsible thing. We've identified an immediate and viable solution. And I'm in direct contact and always aligned with the EDA team and with Tim on just making the board aware that we are asking for relocation and realignment of our site to a secondary site. This site meets the technical, spatial, programmatic requirements of the original award. Most importantly, this pivot doesn't alter the mission, the deliverables, the intended outcomes of the project. It allows us to protect the state's investment, maintain the confidence of our private and philanthropic partners, and also move swiftly towards completion. With this approval, we can activate our construction and program build-out, regain our momentum, and also make sure that the Equity and Innovation Hub opens as envisioned and becomes a model of inclusive innovation in our beautiful state of New Jersey. Closing, I just want to say that we remain deeply committed to transparency, accountability. Our ask of the board and of the team at the EDA is that this be approved expeditiously. And I want to thank you all for just allowing me space and grace to speak. We had the same conversation some months ago at a chair meeting, and I really do believe in the board's mission and the EDA's impact on our state. However, I do, as the CEO and founder of this space that protects over 30 startups in our city of Newark that are also involved in state projects, I have to state that we need the support and we need this momentum. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Medina. It's Tim. Appreciate your comments. Appreciate the spirit of them, as always. As you know, we're working on this, diligently working like hell on it. We're meeting tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll have some updates for you then, giving it as much consideration as possible, including lots of emails this morning, knowing we might hear from you this morning. You have my word. We are working it as hard as we can.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Any other folks on Teams with questions at this time?
Already a public comment?
Are you opening your line to provide public comment? Chairman, I'm not seeing anybody else with their hands raised for public comment at this time on Teams. And everybody on Teams is reminded, now that public comment is over, to please keep your lines muted, otherwise staff will mute you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Now, operator, could you see if there's anyone on the phone who would like to make a public comment?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may please press star then one at this time. One moment, please, for our first question.
No, we're probably number 6 or 8 on the agenda.
And at this time, we have no questions on the phone line.
Okay, operator, thank you very much. We're now going to consider the public comment section of the meeting closed. And again, just a reminder to people on the phone to mute and on Teams to please mute unless you're speaking. We're going to move now to the incentives committee section, and I'm going to ask Josh, who's the committee chair, to give a quick review of what happened since our last board meeting.
Thank you, Chairman. The NJEDA Incentives Committee met on October 28th. Staff presented recommendations to approve the Aspire tax credit applications, CAFE tax credit applications, and the first next New Jersey AI tax credit approval. Staff will present these items today as part of our agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. So our first item, Annie Suero on the Aspire Award for New Brunswick.
You're asking the board to approve $359.3 million in Aspire tax credits for Downtown Hub Associates 3 LLC. The transformative project known as H3 represents the third phase of the New Jersey Health Life Science Exchange, the Helix Initiative. The proposed development consists of a 42-story, 562,000 square foot mixed-use project in New Brunswick, located directly across from the New Brunswick train station adjacent to New Jersey Transit bus stops, near Rutgers University and approximately 15 miles from Newark Airport. The majority, 53% of the project, consists of a residential component known as the Residences at Helix, comprising of 265 mixed income units with an 80% market rate and 20% affordable split, as well as a commercial office space to be leased by Middlesex County. specialized lab space to be leased by Rutgers University and student housing for Rutgers students, Rutgers School of Medicine. The applicant is a joint venture equally owned by DevCo and Penrose 50-50. DevCo is a nonprofit real estate development organization specializing in mixed-use, residential, commercial, and institutional projects. Its primary mission is to advance development initiatives and promote public and private investment through the city of New Brunswick. DevCo served as lead developer for several projects that have received ADA support, notably Helix One, which was approved for an Aspire Award back in 2023. Penrose is a real estate development and management firm specializing in the planning, financing, and delivery of multifamily mixed-use and mixed-income communities with a primary focus on advancing affordable and workhouse initiatives. Penrose has also served as lead developer on two previously approved Aspire projects. Both Penrose and DevCo are the lead developers for this entity. During construction, DevCo and Penrose staff and consultants will be responsible for managing all aspects of the project. And upon completion, Penrose will manage the residential component in the building, and DevCo will hire a property manager to manage the day-to-day operations for the commercial component. The total development cost is $485 million. To determine the appropriate award amount, ineligible costs under statute and program rules were excluded, resulting in a total eligible project cost of $449 million. The required developer equity contribution of 10% is equal to roughly $48 million, and in this case, the developer is contributing $53 million, meeting the minimum requirement. To help further size the award, we assess the project's rate of return using the maximum rate of return analysis provided by JLL. And with the benefit of the tax credit, the equity IRR is 10.6%, which is below JLL's max rate for comparable mixed-use developments of 12.24%. We evaluated the applicant's request in accordance with the program's applicable award caps. As a transformative project located in a government-restricted municipality, it is eligible to receive up to 80% of total eligible costs, or $400 million, whichever is less, and that is how we calculated the award. And based on these factors, staff is recommending board approval for an Aspire Award in the amount of $359,363,826. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Annie. Just a little bit of additional color on H1 and H2. So H1 is under construction and construction is nearly complete. We'll open sometime in Q1. Sometime maybe for January 20th will be some sort of event to commemorate the governor's involvement in that. Might be the front door, you know, door handle assembly commemoration, but something will open in the first quarter. We'll have office space in H1. H2 is also under construction. That is the Nokia Bell Labs headquarters, and then H3 sort of completes the set. So a really exciting milestone in the journey for that site, which sits across. Basically, across the street from Rutgers, across the street from Johnson's headquarters, and across the street from the New Brunswick train station, which is also being renovated and modernized. So lots of good stuff going on there.
And just again, this is a transformative award, right, which is based on size.
Yes, that's based off size and that minimum project.
Right, and so 80% is our highest level of potential calculation tax credits.
Correct.
This project in Patterson, Trenton, and Atlantic City, you can get to 85. Some of those deficits are right, those heights yet, but the possibility exists.
Okay. Anyone, any board members, questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Weinrich, move it.
Thanks, Josh. Second.
Second, Elijah.
Thank you, Bill. Any further discussion? A hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the award is approved. Go ahead, keep going.
So the next item that I'm going to present is a two-in-one item for the board's consideration. So we're requesting that the board approve, one, a modification of the net benefit analysis policy That was formally approved by members on November 10th of 2021 as part of the creation of the Aspire program to more accurately capture employment in the hospitality industry by using an estimate of employees per room or per key as the reference rather than an estimate based on square footage. And the second item is an Aspire tax credit award of $63.4 million to a commercial project in Hoboken. So the project proposes the ground-up construction of a new full-service Hilton Hotel on the former Hoboken Post Office parking lot in front of Sinatra Drive along the Hoboken waterfront. The site is located one block from Hoboken Terminal, providing access to New Jersey Transit and bus service, PATH trains, and the New York Waterway Ferry. The proposed 20-story, 259,000-square-foot hotel will include up to 350 guest rooms, ground floor retail and lobby level restaurants and bars and meeting spaces, and a rooftop and bar and terrace. The applicant is a special purpose entity created to own and operate the project. It is wholly owned by 1SD Investor Holdings, LLC. That company was formed through a partnership between HH Joint Ventures Partners, LLC, which holds 54.11% interest. 2GV LLC holding 44.89% interest, and KMS Development Partners LP, which holds 1% interest. Together, these partners have provided all of the initial equity needed to acquire the property and to begin development. KMS serves as the managing member of 1SD Investor Holdings LLC and is also the lead developer on the project. KMS is a full-service real estate development and property management firm that undertakes both self-initiated projects and assignments for institutional and government clients. The firm's experience spans a full development cycle, including due diligence, financing feasibility, and community engagement. This is the authority's first time evaluating an application for this developer. The total development cost is about $260.2 million. And to help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land costs and costs incurred prior to application, bringing the total eligible project cost to $223 million. The developer equity required contribution is 20%, which is equal to $52 million, and the developer here is contributing $101 million, meeting the minimum requirement. To help further size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. We used the maximum rate of return provided by JLL, and with the benefit of the tax credits, the equity IRR is 13.6, which is below the max rate for comparable hotel development of 15%. We subject the applicant's request to program's various award caps. The project is located in an enhanced area, so therefore it is eligible to receive up to 60% of total eligible costs, or $90 million, whichever is less, except here the award is being capped by the net benefit test. Based off these factors, we're recommending one, an Aspire award of $63,479,336, and two, the modification of the net benefit analysis policy. Happy to open the floor for questions.
Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? When would this be completed? When would they start and complete?
So I think they're projecting to start 3 months after board approval, and it'll take about 36 months to complete.
No further comments or questions. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Hi, Jonathan.
Thank you all. Second. No further comments or questions. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, your word is approved. Thanks. Thank you, Annie. Next on CAFE, Elizabeth.
Manuel Paulino from the Department of Banking and Insurance is on the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very excited to be bringing the first Cultural Arts Facilities Expansion, or CAFE, application to the board for approval. The first memo here has three main recommendations. The first one is to define cultural arts. The second one is to reserve tax credits from the Aspire and Emerge programs for CAFE to ensure some ongoing program flexibility. And then the third part is to approve a tax credit award for Liberty Science Center, which is the applicant for the Project Supernova. So since this is the first CAFE memo, I want to provide a very brief refresher on what the program is. The program is designed to support cultural arts capital projects through the award of tax credits for the construction, renovation, and expansion of cultural arts facilities. The program provides 100% of eligible expenses capped at $75 million per project as tax credits, which are issued during the five-year eligibility period that occurs after construction has been completed. So among other things, the program requires that the applicant meet the definition of cultural arts institution, have ownership or lease space in the cultural arts facilities expansion project, and operate the facility throughout that five-year eligibility period, and that the facility be open to the public. The program also requires a minimum project size of a $5 million capital investment, and there is an equity requirement of 20%, 10% in the GRM. So I just wanted to go a little bit into the equity because, again, we're giving the 100% tax credit, so it might seem a little bit odd to have a 20% equity requirement when you're giving 100% tax, or 20% equity when you're giving 100% tax credit. Both of these items are required by statute. The purpose of the equity is that it gives us additional assurance that the applicant can pay for the construction. And I just want to clarify that just because you're getting a 100% tax credit doesn't mean that you're getting 100% of the value upfront as cash into the project. As I just mentioned, the tax credit is awarded after construction is completed, and applicants are expected to be selling the tax credit to realize its value, and that impacts the cash flow into the project. In addition, we also do allow property value to be part of the equity contribution. So with that out of the way, the next piece is that while the program began as a competitive program, which was required by statute, we had recent legislation that included a provision to convert the program from competitive to rolling application. Operating on a rolling basis offers several advantages, such as enabling us to bring these applications to the board for decisions as they become ready, rather than waiting for all the applications to be decisions simultaneously. The original statutory allocation for this program was $1.2 billion. However, as mentioned in this memo, the recent legislation allows for the authority to allocate $500 million from the Aspire and Emerge programs to CAFE. In the first round of CAFE, which opened on April 7th and closed on June 13th of this year, we are currently reviewing 964,000 plus, 964 million, I'm sorry, in applications, including the one we're looking at today. Then we had a second round, which opened on July 10th and closed on August 11th of this year, and that brought in another 424 million that staff is currently reviewing. So that brings us to our first request. We currently have $137,247,803 in applications under review that are above that $1.2 billion initial statutory allocation. Therefore, we are requesting the board reserve that amount in tax credits from the $500 million allowed by the recent legislation from Aspire and Emerge to allow the CAFE program to operate on the rolling program moving forward. This reservation will be reduced if applicants are rejected, declined, or withdrawn. We are also requesting approval of the policy to reallocate the tax credits as needed for a project as determined at board approval of the project. The next request is to establish a clear interpretation of cultural arts. The Act and the rules outline what a cultural arts institution facility is, and it lists specific examples such as aquariums, museums, performing arts centers. And it also excludes certain facilities that are predominantly used for athletics, recreation, or non-arts-based community centers. However, they do not explicitly define cultural arts. And so, to address that, we are recommending a comprehensive definition that encompasses really a wide range of creative and cultural arts. This includes performing, visual, fine arts, music, dance, graphic design, film, digital media and video, architecture and urban design, humanities, literature, and arts education, historic preservation, museum curation, craft, and folk arts. And this all draws upon the definition of arts and culture that is outlined in another law, that governs local government issuance of bonds for arts and culture projects. In addition to that, we recommend recognizing the public presentation of science in creative and accessible formats, like interactive exhibits, as part of cultural arts. So then the definition within this memo ensures CAFE program supports a holistic view of culture that aligns with the examples provided in the acts and rules. This brings us to the part of the memo where we are recommending the first tax credit award through the CAFE program to Liberty Science Center, Inc., in an amount not to exceed $39,645,323 for the project Supernova located in Jersey City. This project aims to transform Liberty Science Center into an all-weather accessible destination. The plans include renovating 35,815 square feet of indoor space and then also adding 106,375 square feet of outdoor exhibitions. That includes a physics-themed mini golf course, a river otter habitat, a 9/11 memorial garden, along with some other exhibitions and landscaping. Plus, there's indoor renovations. We're going to convert an unused gallery space for high-profile exhibitions, updates to the Hudson River exhibit with new interactive displays and media elements, technological upgrades to the planetarium, and then there's some additional items noted in the memo. The construction is expected to start in the first quarter of 2026 and take 30 months to complete. The applicant, Liberty Science Center, Inc., is a nonprofit organization which was incorporated to, quote, fund, establish, operate, and maintain a museum related to science and technology. And the Liberty Science Center is a museum whose mission is to, quote, inspire the next generation of scientists and engineers and excite learners of all ages about the power, promise, and pure fun of science and technology, and change the face of science education in New Jersey and beyond. With that, staff concludes that the applicant does satisfy the definition of a cultural arts institution. The applicant will serve as their own lead development entity. They have extensive experience in planning and exhibit development and have designed exhibitions across the world. The applicant is also collaborating with a team of professionals for this CAFE project who also have extensive experience in completing capital projects of similar or greater size. Review of the application also included sister agency, legal and financial review, review of project costs, including eligible costs, and the proposed construction schedule. Applicant was also scored by a scoring committee and received a score of 66 out of a possible 100, surpassing the required minimum of 40. Documentation was provided showing the proposed terms for the sale of the tax credit and 90 cents on the dollar, which exceeds the program minimum of 85 cents on the dollar. The credit and finance review found that the applicant does have adequate and bona fide sources of funding to cover all project costs, and there is a reasonable expectation that these sources of funding will be available to complete the project. The applicant has also illustrated the wherewithal to meet the minimum 20% equity requirement and has demonstrated a project financing gap. Additionally, the authority's consultant, JLL, determined that the project costs did not exceed what would be considered reasonable for the scope of the work and the type of project. With that in mind, staff finds that the Liberty Science Center application for Project Supernova satisfies the eligibility criteria and recommends a tax credit award of 100% of eligible costs with a maximum tax credit amount of $39,645,323 based on eligible costs. So that concludes this presentation. Happy to take any questions.
One question. You said that we have 1.2 billion.
Yes.
In available funding, and with the applications that we currently have under review, we've exhausted.
Yes, more than exhausted. That assumes that no additional applicants withdraw or get declined or rejected, which, you know, is possible as we continue our review that some of those things could happen, or even as we review the amount of tax credit requests, it could be sized down based on actual eligible costs.
I hesitate to beg because begging is a lot, but having that backstop available, just from a workability perspective of reviewing these applications, is extremely helpful. Otherwise, we have to do them in the order they came in, and as soon as you finish one, and you're waiting 3 weeks for someone to have their questions answered, you can't touch the others. So this is like very practically helpful. The legislature gave us that backstop capacity for exactly that reason, what we asked for.
And are we, just procedurally, are we going to take three separate votes here?
No, one vote.
One vote on all three things?
Yes.
Okay. So the three things, again, just to be clear for everybody, is we're saying we want to reserve another $137 million to address the question that Jewel raised. Second is we're changing the amending the definition, adopting what is in other legislation and adding a science component to that. And then third is the Project Supernova award. And just again for everybody, because I know I get confused about this, we have another Liberty Science Center related item out there, correct?
Correct. That is called SciTech City and or EdgeWorks. EdgeWorks is the Strategic Innovation Center partners. That has actually not come back to us to close and fully fund. We've announced that but not fully funded it
right.
And closed it.
Unrelated.
The city developer is the same entity, but it is not
different
the same. It's not the same scope of work. Different project, yes.
Okay.
This is kind of the core Liberty Science Center that you know and love getting more like you know and love.
Motion to approve.
Okay.
I
was going to ask if there are any more questions. Anyone on the phone with questions or comments?
I want that River Otter thing.
Yes.
It's going right away.
One of the mini golf. All right. We have a motion. We have a motion from Rob and a second, I think, from Elizabeth. No further discussions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. Elizabeth, now on the Mayo Performing Arts Center.
Terrific. All right, so this second memo is for a tax credit award under CAFE to South Street Theater Company doing business as Mayo Performing Arts Center for the Mayo Performing Arts Center expansion and renovation project in Morristown, Morris County, for a tax credit award not to exceed $65 million. So the Mayo Performing Arts Center was originally founded as the South Street Theater in 1994. They operate a historic 1,300-seat performing arts venue, which attracts over 240,000 patrons annually with more than 300 performances. Mayo Performing Arts Center is a provider of arts education, serving around 35,000 students each year with growing demand. The CAFE project will utilize a portion of the theater's existing site, which currently includes performing arts space and parking facilities. The CAFE project includes renovation to the existing structure, a significant expansion with a footprint of more than 31,000 square feet, and construction of a parking deck. So some of the specific project components are one, we have the addition, which is the new construction, including an arts and education center, artist spaces, and support spaces. We have renovation, which includes interior upgrades to production, education, and office spaces, as well as the restoration, which includes preservation of the historic 46,000 square foot theater auditorium, and the new parking garage, construction for 84 parking spaces to be used exclusively for the Mayo Performing Arts Center use, and the associated site work. So this project aims to enhance learning opportunities and increase attendance by expanding its facilities to accommodate its growing demand. The construction is expected to commence in spring 2026 and will take 26 months to complete. The applicant, South Street Theater Company, Inc., is a nonprofit organization which was incorporated to, quote, present a wide range of programs that entertain, enrich, and educate the diverse population of Northern New Jersey and enhance the economic vitality of the region, unquote. And as noted in their mission statement, quote, the organization acts as a cultural and artistic attraction to the surrounding area and enhances the economic vitality of the region through an array of related programs and events, unquote. Staff concludes that this application satisfies the definition of a cultural arts institution. The applicant will serve as their only development entity, and they have a long-standing history of managing successful construction and renovation projects at this site, and that's all detailed in the memo. The theater was once at risk of disrepair and demolition and has been revitalized through a community-driven capital campaign or multiple campaigns. There's a significant $7.5 million campaign that was done from 1997 to 2001 that restored the auditorium and front of house spaces as well as the building entrance. And then after that, there was the setting, the stage campaign in 2007 that introduced modern capabilities. The review of this application also included sister agency, legal and financial review, review of project costs, including eligible costs, and the proposed construction schedule. The applicant was scored by a scoring committee. Application was scored by a scoring committee, received a score of 71 out of 100, surpassing the required minimum of 40. Documentation was provided showing the proposed terms of the sale of the tax credit at 90 cents on the dollar, which again exceeds the program minimum of 85 cents on the dollar. The credit and finance review did find that the applicant has adequate and bona fide sources of funding to cover all project costs, and that there is a reasonable expectation that these sources of funding will be available to complete the project. The applicant has also illustrated the wherewithal to meet the 20% equity contribution requirement of the program and has demonstrated a financing gap. Additionally, the authority's consultant, JLL, conducted a cost reasonableness review, and in their assessment, they made certain adjustments to the project cost estimate and ultimately estimated the final cost of the project to be slightly less than the applicant's estimate, about 1% to 2% less. We found that, staff found that difference is within the reasonable range. So, accounting for the previous memo, which was just approved, we have more than $1.297 billion funds currently available. Staff finds that South Street Theater's application for the Mayo Performing Arts Center Expansion and Renovation Cafe project satisfies the eligibility criteria and recommends a tax credit award of 100% of actual eligible costs, with a maximum tax credit amount of $65 million based on their actual eligible cost. That concludes this presentation. I'm happy to take any questions on this one.
Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, here.
Rob, there's no river out here. Is it okay? Okay.
Hearing no questions or comments, can I hear a motion to approve?
Move it. Why not?
Josh, I'll consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Good luck. Congratulations on the first two.
Thank you very much.
All right, next, Historic Property Reinvestment Program, Adita on 153 Halsey Street in Newark. And I think, Phil, you're going to recuse on this, correct?
I am going to recuse the County of Essex. My employee is a condominium agreement, part owner of the building. So, abundance of caution, I will recuse myself.
Yeah. Trying to free you up to get a coffee.
You want it?
You go to the bar cart.
Second Well, good morning. I am here to present a recommendation for a tax credit award under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program to 153 Holstic Newark LLC in the not to exceed amount of $11,801,879.42 for the Gibraltar Building Rehabilitation Program in Newark. The last application round under the program, which closed in December, we received 10 applications. For a combined total project cost of just under $430 million and a maximum tax credit request of just over $88 million. Out of those applications, we had two that have been withdrawn, five that have been previously approved by the board this year for totaling over $53 million, one being presented today, and we have two that remain on the review. The program, which is designed to work in conjunction with the Federal Historic Tax Credit Program, is set up to provide credit of between 45 and 60% of eligible costs, up to maximum caps based on project type and location. This project is located within a qualified incentive track, therefore they're eligible for credits of up to 60% up to a maximum of $12 million. So their award would be just under the maximum cap. The project consists of the partial rehabilitation of the building, which was built in 1926, and basically the work would be half of the main lobby or the main floor, which would be a commercial space, and rehabilitation of floors 2 to 8, which will continue their current use as at least office space. They also are doing some work on finishes, interior and exterior finishes, and the complete modernization of the elevator. The applicant is a limited liability company, and while this is technically their first initial development, they have a team that has extensive experience doing this type of work, including projects that are same or similar or greater size and complexity, and a lot of work completed in Northern New Jersey. The review for the application included sister agency legal underwriting review, as well as review of the project costs, including all eligible costs, and proposed construction schedule. It's also important to note that in addition to this application, this project also submitted for NJ COOL program here at ADA, and they were awarded two awards for $1 million each for some work that is included with the scope of work of this project. The historic preservation team did met with the NJ COOL team, and we looked at, in detail at the scope of work and the scope of work and the money that has been provided to NJ COOL was taken into account when we reviewed what the eligible cost would be. The application also was scored by a scoring committee, and they received a 58.17 out of a possible 100, therefore surpassing the minimal score requirement of 50. They submitted information showing the proposed sale of the terms for sale of the credits at a price of 88 cents on the dollars, which is over the minimum 85. And finally, the underwriting review for the project, which was completed by the underwriting department at EDA, found that the project and the applicant had sufficient funds to cover all the project costs and that there was a reasonable expectation that the sources would be available to complete the project. They also illustrated their wherewithal to meet the minimum 20% equity contribution requirement and demonstrated that there was a funding gap. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? So hearing none, going to hear a motion to approve. Thank you, Elizabeth. Second. Thank you, Jewel. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, abstentions, or recusals other than Phil? Okay, hearing none, the award is approved. Thank you. All right, next, literally, next, NJ, the CoreWeave Next NJ AI program application.
And today I am an overview of the Next Major AI program for AI and the proposed CoreWeave AI data center project in Kenilworth, New Jersey. The project that truly captures the vision and the purpose behind this program. The members of the authority are asked to approve the proposed Next New Jersey program for AI tax credit award of $50 million per year over 5 years for a total of $250 million to CoreWeave. The recommended tax credit award is subject to conditions subsequent to receiving and maintaining the award, including submission of certifications and evidence that the company has met eligibility criteria. Staff is authorized to lower the award amount and the term will be lowered to reflect the award amount that corresponds with the actual employment and capital investment in the project completion certification provided, that neither application information nor the project has materially changed. Just some background on the Next New Jersey program for AI. On January 7, 2021, Governor Phil Murphy signed the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020, establishing two cornerstone programs, Emerge and Inspire. The Next New Jersey program for AI, signed into law on July 25, 2024, leverages $500 million in uncommitted Emerge and Aspire funds to make New Jersey a national leader in artificial intelligence. The program's purpose is clear: to drive job creation, capital investment, and innovation, and to cement our state as a premier destination for AI industry growth. This tax credit program is designed to attract major AI and data center projects. To qualify, a project must create at least 100 new full-time jobs in New Jersey, make a minimum of $100 million in capital investment, pay wages at 120% or more of the county median salary, ensure 80% of employees work at work time occurs within the state, and establish a collaborative partnership with a New Jersey University research entity or system. Each approved business also commits to maintaining those jobs and investments for 10 years, demonstrating a true long-term commitment to the state. With that said, I am happy to present our first applicant, CoreWeave, a New Jersey founded and headquartered company that's become a global leader in AI cloud computing. Founded in 2017 and headquartered in Livingston, New Jersey, CoreWeave provides high-performance GPU infrastructures for AI workloads. With roughly 160 employees statewide and over 250,000 GPUs deployed globally, CoreWeave is a fast-growing AI infrastructure provider. This year, on March 28, 2025, CoreWeave went public, raising $1.5 billion, marking the largest U.S. tech IPO since 2021. CoreWeave is now expanding its footprint in New Jersey with its latest project, the redevelopment of a former Merck facility at 11 Ness, located at 2000 Galloping Hill Road in Kenilworth, New Jersey. This is part of the Northeast Science and Technology Campus, better known as NEST. Through its affiliate CW NEST Tenant LLC, CoreWeave will repurpose and expand the existing structure into a 392,600 square foot state-of-the-art AI data center, a major anchor of its U.S. operations. This project represents an eligible capital investment of approximately $1.7 billion, which accounts for more than 17 times the program minimum requirement. CoreWeave will create 143 new full-time high-quality jobs, exceeding the threshold by 43%. Each position will earn at least $79,000 or 120% of Union County's median salary, and all roles will be directly engaged in AI-related functions. Construction began September 15, 2025, following submission of the completed application, ensuring all expenditures qualified under the program's requirements. As part of its commitment, CoreWeave is also investing in collaboration, which is also a key element in this program. The company has certified a $25 million collaboration investment to partner with New Jersey-based AI startups and research entities. This is in addition to CoreWeave's pledge of $7.5 million towards the development of the New Jersey AI Hub, an initiative intended to serve as a collaborative space for AI research, commercialization, and workforce training. These efforts underscore CoreWeave's role not just as an investor, but a long-term innovation partner with its team. Given the scale of the project and its alignment with program goals, CoreWeave qualifies for the program's maximum tax credit award, $50 million per year over 5 years, for a total of $250 million over the 10-year commitment. The applicant has acknowledged and will comply with all statutory requirements, including prevailing wage, affirmative action, green building standards, and will remain in good standing with all state agencies. Standard conditions of approval will apply, including certification of affiliate status, documentation of collaboration, and fulfillment of job and investment commitments within 3 years with allowable extensions. In closing, CoreWeave's $1.7 billion AI data center investment represents exactly what the next New Jersey program for AI program was designed to achieve. Significant capital investment, high-paying job creation, and deep collaboration between technology leaders and New Jersey's AI innovation ecosystem. With that said, I turn the floor back over for questions.
Thanks, Mercedes. Just a minute of additional commentary. This is the first approval under the proposed approval under this program that the governor signed at the law, I think, last summer. Lots of states have incentive programs that are encouraging data center development. Ours is, I think, best of breed because it's quite different from what a lot of other states do. First of all, it's encouraging and requiring significant permanent job creation. So if you just have a data center, you're not getting 143 jobs. You have permanent jobs at the company level as well. So you know, you have to have several county-sized data centers to have 143 jobs on a permanent basis. So one has the job creation perspective. The two, it does have the significant capital investment requirement, which spins off an enormous amount of tax revenue in the state at a local level. But three is that collaboration agreement element, so that there is a locational advantage for New Jersey startups, New Jersey higher ed, in having data centers and these kind of AI AI infrastructure present. So it's got lots of bells and whistles that I think make it, you know, an incredibly strong tool in the toolkit, but also a much smarter, frankly, than what other states are doing to participate in the AI revolution, which is omnipresent for all of us, but I think this is a really good example in the collaboration agreement, the job creation, all really, really important portions of this proposal.
It's a $250 million award out of a $500 million program, so it's half.
That's correct.
Program. So would you anticipate that there's one other award, or you know, how do you think about sizing?
Correct me, Ron, I don't think we have any other applications in-house at this moment, do we? We do not. Okay. This is the only one we have in-house at this moment. Somebody else is going to invest $1.7 billion and create 143 jobs. They get a similar size award. Okay. If that happens, we'll rate for them.
Yep.
I'm not aware of that in the offing at this present moment.
Just curious, is it anticipated that CoreWeave will increase the grid infrastructure and things of that nature as a part of this, or is that something totally separate?
Somewhat separate. I think this particular data center is already really well served by power. It's an old work facility, so it's a great place to make those kinds of goodness. It does not require new generation investment knowledge.
This is the site you see as you drive past on the park.
On the park, right, right across
the Kennelworth.
On the other side of the golf course, yeah.
Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Anyone else in the room, comments or questions?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner. A second?
Second, Weinrich.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Congratulations, very exciting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we're moving on to Policy Committee. I will give a brief report. The Policy Committee met on November 3rd and considered several items which are being presented for action today. Highlights include approvals for the Food Equity and Economic Development, or FEED, program in New Jersey, Strategic Innovation Center Investment, NJ Innovation Evergreen Fund Qualified Investments, actions under the NJ Innovations Fellows Program, utilization of the FY26 Main Street appropriation, and approval of the NJ Base Program parameters. Staff will now present, and our first item is Tara on Economic Security and NJ Feed. Feed NJ. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I am excited to be here today to present to you the recommendations for the first set of approvals for the Food Equity and Economic Development in New Jersey, or Feed NJ program. I want to thank the team broadly at the EDA. It has been a all-hands-on-deck approach over the past couple weeks to get this board memo to this meeting, but also have to give huge thanks to the food security team, Richard Godred, Ryan Todd, Riley Edwards, Ty Blitzstein, and then wonderful interns, Aria Jordan and Freya Quinn. Before I start, I want to acknowledge, as Tim did in his remarks, that the last 2 weeks have been dramatic in a way that we haven't really seen since COVID in terms of disruptions to people's ability to feed their families. And I think that the SNAP benefits being turned off, which was the first time in history that's ever happened, including all prior federal government shutdowns, really reinforced the scale of food insecurity in New Jersey, but also emphasized the fragility and the capacity constraints of the incredible frontline organizations that do all the work to feed New Jerseyans. So we are excited that while we were able to advance some emergency funding last week, this program, Feed NJ, something we've been working on the better part of a year, building on the success for Atlantic City food security pilot. And so what you'll see before you today are a set of recommendations focused on the resilience and infrastructure of the food security ecosystem. And I just want to emphasize, as when I get to the request for approval, this is the first set of approvals, but we anticipate coming to the December board meeting with an additional set. So just by a quick refresher, go to the next slide, please. Next one. So almost a year ago, the board approved the creation of the Feed NJ program, and again, really building on lessons learned from our pilot in Atlantic City, we took this model statewide and built out a competitive grant program that allowed entities in food desert communities to identify areas of need and propose solutions on how to address them. Next slide. Just broadly parameters, again, to remind you, we have up to $30 million in total funding. The source of the funding are the proceeds from our 2023 and 2020 food desert tax credit auction. These are completely state money. There is no federal dollars in this. And the grants we're making available are up to $500,000. And importantly, the the breadth of what is proposed was fairly exhaustive. We left it open to considerations from the applicants. Next slide, please. But the one of the broad parameters was that they had to identify at least one of our priority food desert communities. So you may remember from seeing the list, there are 50 food desert communities. The ranking matters. The higher on the list, the more acute the needs are. And so because we already have a city program, we identified the top 15 minus one for Atlantic City, the top 14 food desert communities. Applicants had to propose to serve one or more, and they could also propose to serve a number of the remaining 35, and I'll get to those results in a minute. Next slide, please. And in terms of what we evaluated, so we had a very rigorous scoring process. We have a committee of EDA staff. We received 191 applications. I believe this is the largest competitively scored program the EDA has ever done. The spreadsheets certainly show that in terms of the level of detail that we have. And we focused on not just the vision for the project and the potential impact, but a couple of real key markers that I wanted to emphasize. One, the capacity of the organization to deliver on what they were proposing. There are wonderful, laudable ideas. We also wanted to ensure that our funds would be used by entities that had the ability to implement what they were proposing. Particularly focused also on community engagement. So we award points based on the proof of community engagement, local ties, recognition that the community and stakeholders that are in these food deserts want, welcome, support the proposal. And we also looked at the viability of the budget, et cetera. So that was a refresher, and now to the meat of what I am here to present to you. So two slides, Anthony. Great. So essentially, and you should all in the room have a copy of this because I know the following few pages have very small fonts. We received 191 applications requesting over $70 million. Reminder, we have $30 million. We took 145 of those 191 applications to scoring. A number of them are still in the scoring process, but this is the first set of 50 applications that we are recommending for award based on their scores for a total of $20.6 million. Again, we plan to come to you in December for probably another 20 to 25 awards for the remaining $9.4 million.
Sarah, what do you think was the 145 or 195? What would the total dollars be?
$30 million.
That's what's available. What would the request be?
Oh, what was asked?
Yeah.
It was about $59 million. Yeah.
So let's call it $60 million.
Yeah. Okay. And again, there's an eligibility threshold of recommended based on their minimum score. Certainly not all of those that were scored met the minimum score. We are likely to be able to fund north of three quarters of those who scored above the minimum, but we won't be able to.
And when did the applications open?
They opened in February. They closed in April.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've been working tirelessly past few months to get these scored and really take the scoring very seriously because that makes a difference in determining some eligibility. So what's before you today are 50 awards, an average award of a little over $400,000. For the food security world, that is like $400 million. That is a very large amount of funding, especially for some of these community organizations. This is not something that they are often used to obtaining, and this is probably the largest infusion of community-driven food security money in the state, certainly in the last decade. The 50 that we're presenting propose to serve all 14 of the top food desert communities, more than a dozen. Many of them propose to serve more than one, but more than a dozen of the 50 propose to serve Camden, Trenton, and Newark. So you'll have at least 12 awards in each of those cities, 10 in New Brunswick, 8 in Patterson, 6 in Passaic, 5 in the Bridgeton, Fairfield, Lawrence, and 4 in the city of Salem. So really excited about the breadth of that impact. And just last couple things, we are also, as you'll see in the following pages, there's a lot of themes of the proposals that people were bringing to board and to the application, many of which the last 2 weeks have highlighted the need for this kind of infrastructure investment. So 16 of the awards are for a newer expanded food pantry. About a dozen are for partnerships with farmers to bring New Jersey-grown food to local residents.
6 are for new and expanded mobile markets, 5 are for new delivery vehicles and trucks, and 3 are for meal recovery. And in addition to serving the top food desert communities, there are 25 other food desert communities on the list that are proposed to be served, including Irvington, Jersey City, Perth Amboy, Elizabeth. So seeing, you know, this is certainly the vision of what we were hoping we would generate and just really excited about what's there. So in closing, what we're asking for approval today is the first 50 awards based on scoring for $20.6 million total. We have a handful of applications to continue scoring, and we'll be bringing the balance to future board meetings to have contingency plans upon contingency plans. We're also requesting approval to reserve proceeds from our 2025 taxpayer auction to offset any potential appeals, just to have that backstop, and then a minor change around the deadlines because of the volume of applications we received. We want to make sure that applicants who become grantees can meet the timeline of program closing. And you'll see in much detail in a small font on your subsequent pages what is being proposed. Happy to answer any questions.
If you just remind us, because I think you mentioned this in committee, scope of the issue in New Jersey, how many families receive SNAP benefits? Or
About 800,000 people in New Jersey receive SNAP benefits. About 340,000 of them are children. About 410,000 households. And one thing that's important, I think the last couple of weeks have highlighted, is you have people who are facing severe food insecurity, who may not have any source of employment or may not have any source of income. Then you have what are often referred to as the working poor. And many of the people who were lining up in food pantries last week or couldn't go to the supermarket, they have jobs, they have income and resources, and they rely on SNAP. And increasingly, with inflation rising for grocery costs, they're relying on the charitable feeding sector to help them, you know, feed their families. And I think the last couple weeks have just shown such a light.
So almost 10% of the population. Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Could I hear a motion to approve?
Chairman?
Yes.
So I'd love to make the motion, but just in Essex County, we've had to deal with it this last 2 weeks, 63,000 families just in Essex County on SNAP benefits. And I was surprised that over, I think the number was 24,000, were families that were over, individuals were over 65 years old. So it, you know, it's even harder for our senior citizen population. So I'm honored to second it and the great work we're doing here at PBA.
I think you were the
I'll make the motion.
Chair Fred Dumont will second. For my good friend.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. Tara, thank you so much.
Yeah, just one note, Chairman. In addition to deep appreciation to Tara and her team and the Office of Attorney General and Lisa's team and everybody who pulled together to make this happen faster than it probably was going to because of the recent crisis, just a no, we mean it when we say we really try to think about economic development comprehensively. This meeting's already been a good example of that. We did a big award for, you know, data center and AI. We're doing big awards for food security and investments in food infrastructure at the same time. And so trying to do, maybe not do it all, but do as much as we can, as broadly and deeply as we can, is how Governor Murphy has directed us to act, and I will do our damnedest to continue to act.
And the same reaction when thinking about it, which is to talk about breadth of mission. All right, next on innovation, Tim, on strategic innovation initiatives.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you today to present staff's recommendation for a strategic innovation center investment of up to $24.5 million into the newly formed NJ Hacks Plasma Forge LLC, a 50-50 joint venture with our partners SOSV Investments LLC. Designed to create a global innovation facility fostering startups advancing plasma technology. Very simply, what is plasma? Plasma is the fourth state of matter behind solids, liquids, and gas, which most of us did not study in high school.
Every time you say it, I'm still like, okay.
I'm pretty sure there's three.
Keep moving on.
Then why is a vowel?
Planet. Mrs. Fisher told me there were three.
In fact, plasma makes up 95% of the universe. an estimation. In short, plasma is an ionized gas. Effectively, it conducts electricity. Consider stars and lightning, for example. Plasma technology finds applications in diverse fields, from lighting and displays to material processing and environmental remediation. Example innovations in the space include specialty coating, semiconductor fabrication, advanced processing application, and, of course, fusion energy. The Plasma Forge strategy is twofold. One, to identify intellectual property from within Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory, one of our 17 DOE-funded national laboratories here in New Jersey, managed by Princeton University. The idea is to identify the intellectual property, commercialize it, spin it out as a brand new business. And number two, to identify companies anywhere in the world to develop and commercialize plasma supply chain technologies further here in the state of New Jersey. The Plasma Forge facility will encompass approximately 7 to 10,000 square feet of lab and co-working space, strategically located within 5 miles of PPPL, facilitating close collaboration with this esteemed research institution. That facility will be specially equipped with low-temperature plasma research and development equipment to support the work of the companies there. Startups will benefit not only from the state-of-the-art lab and co-working space, but, of course, the invaluable support of PPPL just down the road. Operations at the Hacks Forge will be managed by our partner, SOSV, responsible for recruiting corporations and sponsors to the initiative. The plan is to accelerate at least 25 companies through the program over the next 5 years. Collaboration with academic partners, including Princeton, will further enhance the startup's ability to develop cutting-edge technology and research. The EDA will commit $24.5 million to the initiative, funding operations, build-out, contingency, and up to $3 million for potential co-investment in participant companies alongside SOSV. SOSV will provide substantial seed funding, averaging $500,000 per company, with additional in-kind support and services reserved for additional follow-up. The SIC will establish an agreement with PPPL, documenting their contribution of no less than $2 million in equipment and expertise, significantly bolstering the resources available to the startups. And within the next 10 years, the project aims to catalyze at least $250 million in private and public funding that seeks to create over 500 high-quality jobs in New Jersey, driving economic growth and innovation in the region. With that, I'll conclude reiterating the request for $24.5 million investment to help capitalize the NJA Hacks Plasma Forge LLC, including authorization to the CEO to execute all documents required, including the operating agreement and entrustment agreement, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EDA, plus associated authority legal costs as allowed by the urban statute. So thank you very much, and questions, if any, are welcome. It will be within 5 miles of PPPL, actually, so we're in advanced discussions for that specific location right now. Can't be inside the perimeter because it's a pretty high security place to go to off-campus.
And this is our, what's our number on innovation centers?
Let's call it 10 for now.
Okay.
Yep. Two other ones that have been announced that I haven't quite gotten over here yet.
Okay.
Here to the final.
10 fine.
10 fine.
Is the 5 mile radius that part of the, if that does, the one that you're in talks with that falls through, is that still going to be a requirement that you go 5 miles?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And we think they're, no, they're very close to signing. Last minute negotiation between two landlords.
Any other comments or questions for Tim? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could we have a motion to approve? Thank you. Second. Thank you, Jewel. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the center is approved. Congratulations. Next, the NJIEF, Devin Patel.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Today, we have a pipeline of two potential evergreen investments into one new portfolio company, which we will be recommending for approval this month. Today, we have approved partnerships with 26 qualified venture firms, managing nearly $6 billion in assets. Assuming this month's investments are improved, the program will have invested over $18 million across 11 portfolio companies. Next slide, please. Today, I'll present two proposed qualified investments alongside two different qualified venture firms into the New Jersey Business Transcend AP. The first investment recommendation is an application by Rittenhouse Ventures for a $750,000 investment into the Series A participating preferred stock financing round of Transcend AP. Upon approval, staff will further reserve an additional $124,700 for management fees and $240,000 for direct and administrative expenses. The second application is by Tech Council Ventures for a $500,000 investment to the same financing round of Transcend AP. Upon approval, staff will further reserve an additional $82,500 for management fees and $240,000 for direct and administrative expenses. Founded in 2008, Rittenhouse Ventures was approved as a qualified venture firm by the members in July of 2023. Based in Wayne, Pennsylvania, Rittenhouse Ventures is focused on early stage B2B software companies across the Mid-Atlantic region with a particular emphasis on the healthcare and pharmaceutical information technology sectors, but they also target verticals including human resources, analytics, financial services, and general SaaS companies. Tech Council Ventures was founded in 2000 and is a New Jersey-based early-stage venture firm. So it was approved as a program qualified venture firm by the members in May 2023. Tech Council Ventures currently manages $91 million of assets and is investing out of its Fund 3 with a focus on investments in advanced materials, clean energy, technology, and healthcare. The EDA is a LP investor in TCV2 and its predecessor fund. TCV has also received an allocation of up to $7.5 million through the SSBCI Life Science Fund Program, though that capital will not be used as part of this transaction. Transcend AP offers a cloud-based multi-tenant solution for automating accounts payable processes for mid-sized corporate customers in the manufacturing, higher education, and healthcare sectors. The platform manages the invoice process of by overseeing each stage from invoice capture through to ready to pay. At its core, the company's product is a workflow system that enables straight-through processing, automating key elements to minimize human involvement. It integrates seamlessly with ERP and other enterprise systems, and the company is expanding its market reach with integrations to Oracle and Microsoft, with plans to add SAP and IFS in the near future. The company is led by an experienced team with a proven startup track record and a host of successful exits, including co-founder and president Mahesh Yadav and co-founder and CEO Jeff Weinstein. Jeff Weinstein is an experienced entrepreneur and executive with a strong background in leading enterprise software companies in various development stages. Throughout his tenure as a technology executive, Jeff has successfully led teams in the areas of AI, machine learning, HR compliance, data security, and e-commerce. Previously, he was the CEO of Bright Answers, a SaaS firm focused on search and knowledge management, which he led to a successful acquisition by Upland Software in 2017. It is worth noting that this investment represents the first instance of a company meeting the program's updated New Jersey requirements signed into law in June 2025. Thanks to the statutory update, companies can now satisfy the program's New Jersey requirements even if less than 50% of their employees are in New Jersey, as long as the company is headquartered in the state and New Jersey represents the state with the largest share of full-time employees relative to other states. The EDA's investment will be part of a $2.5 million Series A participating preferred financing round that Transcend AP will use to fund ongoing product development and expand marketing and business development teams. I am happy to address any questions at this time.
Let me just be clear, we have two separate venture firms who are investing in the same entity.
Yes.
We're allocating between the two.
Yes.
And we've done this before. This is our third time doing this, maybe?
Second.
There's a cap on the total amount of investment.
Our total is how much out of the time we went out?
We are investing $1.25 million out of the $2.5 million.
So half the time?
Yes.
Any comments or questions?
Chairman, it's Josh Weinrich. In an abundance of caution, I'm recusing to avoid any appearance of impropriety, as I have a prior business relationship with Aaron Price, who's president and CEO of a related entity, Tech United.
Just to clarify which one he's recusing on.
On Tech Council Ventures.
Are we taking two separate votes on this?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. So any other comments or questions? Let's have a motion to approve the Rittenhouse Ventures investment. Can I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second?
Second, Elijah.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hey, Josh, you are not recusing from this one, correct?
Correct.
Okay. It is approved. The second is, could I hear a motion to approve the investment by Tech Council Ventures, noting that Josh is recusing? Thank you, Jewel. Second? Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed, abstentions, or recusals other than Josh? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you, Debbie. All right, Michelle, on NJ Innovation Fellows AI cohort approvals and declinations.
Hello, and thank you for having me. My name is Michelle Martinez, and I'm here to present the AI cohort approvals. Just so for background, the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program, established in 2022, supports entrepreneurial teams in New Jersey by providing income replacement grants to teams of eligible first-time entrepreneurs. The program was initially approved for a $10 million allocation, but through the fiscal year 2025 Appropriations Act, an additional $2 million in funding was allocated to support the AI cohort, an extension of the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program. To date, the program has approved 21 cohort companies committing up to $7 million in funding. The AI cohort of this program focuses on AI-focused entrepreneurship and collaborates with Princeton University to mentor startup businesses in this increasingly important industry. The program with bonuses offers up to $400,000 in grant support per team. Applications for the AI cohort were open from June 18th to July 30th of this year. 32 applications were received. 20 were deemed incomplete, and 7 are being recommended for discretionary declination. This includes 6 for failing to rank amongst the highest scored applications. Members are asked to approve the highest scoring applications for inclusion into the AI cohort, representing grant awards totaling $1.85 million, and participation in the 2-year AI-specific mentorship program at Princeton University. Lastly, staff recommends that the CEO be given authority to award the next highest scoring team in the event an award application did not execute the grant agreement. Applications were evaluated based on the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Scoring Rubric and an NGIS AI Innovation Scoring Rubric, with a combined maximum score of 38 points. The 5 recommended grantees for the AI cohort are, first, Chakra.io. Coming out of Newark, New Jersey, with an average score of 31, specializing in AI governance and risk management, with an award of $400,000 that includes $200,000 in bonus funding is being recommended. Beansay AI, also coming out of Newark, with an average score of 30, focused on AI-driven financial planning and analysis and enterprise financial management. An award of $350,000 that includes $150,000 bonus award is being recommended. Finlink AI, coming out of New Brunswick with an average score of 29, developing an AI-driven philanthropy and digital media engagement platform, is being recommended for a $350,000 award, which includes a $150,000 bonus award. Fourth is Bump Labs, coming out of Jersey City with an average score of 28, focused on contextual AI cross-platform communication engine. An award of $350,000 that includes a $150,000 bonus award is being recommended. Lastly, Verde Labs, coming out of Newark, with an average score of 26, focused on biomedical imaging automation. An award of $400,000 that includes a $200,000 bonus being recommended. Once approved, applicants will have 30 days to form and register the business and 60 days to execute the grant agreement. Participants will gain exclusive access to Princeton University's research, expertise, technical resources, and industry network as they advance their AI-focused ventures through the 24-month mentorship program. This cohort of applicants will join a dynamic and growing team, a community of innovators across diverse sectors through the Innovation Fellows program. With that, I will take any questions you might have.
Comments or questions?
Comments. New Jersey continues leading AI, not just with the AI hub, but also in our state government. We're the top three states for using AI in state governments. So I'd encourage any of our grantees to be able to somehow connect with OIT, maybe DPP, about how to become state vendors in AI, since we're always in the Bureau of Services.
Have any state agencies completed 100% training of their staff on AI?
I mean, Department of Labor for sure. I don't know, maybe others.
Maybe others.
Since I started saying that.
Is this our first AI cohort?
AI specific.
Yes.
Focus cohort. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Great. Any further comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Can I hear a motion to approve as recommended?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Do all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the recommendation is approved. Thank you. All right, community development, Maggie, on utilization of the Main Street appropriation or reallocation of funding.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Staff is requesting approval to utilize $4 million identified in the fiscal year 26 budget appropriation for the Main Street Recovery Finance Program, along with the reallocation of approximately $9.7 million from closed or overfunded Main Street products. These funds would support additional grant approvals for the Small Business Lease Grant and the Small Business Improvement Grant. With this funding, we estimate we could extend both products through Q3 2026, providing support to an additional 550 to 600 small businesses. Staff is requesting a 5% administrative fee as well. Next one, please. The total request of $13.7 million in funding would be distributed as follows. 20% or $2.7 million would be allocated to the Small Business Lease Grant. 80% or $10.8 million would be allocated to the Small Business Improvement Grant. And the 5% or $200,000 would be allocated for the administrative fee. The Improvement Grant has significantly higher volume, therefore we split the funding 80%. To recap, the total request is $13.7 million. $4 million would come from the fiscal year 26 Main Street appropriation. $9.7 million would be reallocated from other Main Street products that are either closed or have a surplus. The Main Street Lenders Grant is closed. The Main Street Micro Business Loan is also closed. The Main Street Acquisition Grant has a surplus, and based on current activity, we estimate that only $5 million of the $10 million approved to capitalize the product would be necessary for the program to remain open for the 3 years that was established in the board memo. The New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant is closing and is currently in its fourth and final round. Since launching the lease grant in 2021 and improvement grant in 2022, staff has reviewed and decisioned nearly 10,000 applications, awarded over $100 million in grants, supported nearly 4,000 small businesses statewide, and we continue to receive an average of 40 new applications every week. Thank you for your time and consideration. Happy to answer questions.
First of all, thank you, Maggie, as always. We talk about broadening what we do and deepening what we do. The notion a couple of, 7, 8, 9 years ago to having 10,000 applications for a program and thousands, not very good at math, 3,700 approvals just for those two programs alone. This program is a huge contributor to the fact that I think we're at 17 times, 16 times, something like that, the number of businesses directly impacted by the EDA since the beginning of the Murphy administration. That's an annual number. So 2024 versus 2017, we're up 17x in the number of businesses that are directly impacted by us. This program is a huge contributor to that growth. So thank you, Maggie and Christina, and I'm on the phone, but everybody works on them. Thank you.
Is the source of the funds here federal or state?
State.
And is it, does the program sunset at any, is there an end date? No?
As long as there's money. Yeah.
There's a fetch short. Yeah.
We got that. that was, it was going to lapse. So did we get that taken out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually can find them for.
Great. Any comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve as recommended? Thank you, Elizabeth. Second?
Second, Fred Dumont.
Fred, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or recused or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved. Thank you, Maggie. Andrew, on authority matters, NJ-based program parameters.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Just get my notes here, 1 second. Hey, good morning. This is Andrew Gross, and I serve as the EDA's Director of International Innovation Partnerships. Our office oversees international engagement across the authority, supporting inbound investment, diplomatic outreach, and coordination across agencies for global partnership development. At our core, our mission is to promote and expand foreign economic activity in New Jersey. Today, we're requesting approval for the New Jersey Business Acceleration and Soft Landing Ecosystem, or NJ-based program parameters. This initiative is an important step in advancing our strategy to attract foreign direct investment and help international companies establish a foothold in New Jersey as they expand into the U.S. market. Foreign direct investment continues to be a major growth driver for New Jersey, with over $13 billion invested since the start of the Murphy administration, creating thousands of jobs. NJ Base will build on that success, enabling more companies to choose New Jersey as their U.S. base, generating new investment, employment, and innovation. This program also ensures we remain competitive with other states offering similar incentives to attract global firms. NJ Base was developed in response to strong interest from international entrepreneurs looking for office space and market access outside of New York. Through this program, participating companies will receive free, fully subsidized workspace for up to 1 year, funded by NJEDA, access to New Jersey's innovation ecosystem and local business support services, and a structured business immersion program, a guided curriculum to help them navigate the U.S. market. Our goal is to position New Jersey as a premier landing pad for high-potential international startups, driving new investment, job creation, and innovation across the state. Earlier this year, the board approved both the RFP and lease for the NJ-based site in Jersey City for 7,500 square feet at 32nd Street and selected SOSA USA LLC as the program operator. SOSA will handle daily management, recruitment, programming, and outreach, while EDA retains full authority over final participant approvals and oversight. The Jersey City space will host 12 to 20 companies, between 1 to 3 employees each in total. SOSA will use its global network and promotion efforts to recruit and evaluate high-quality international startups aligned with New Jersey's economic priorities. Today, we're requesting the board's approval for the following. Approval of the NJ-based program parameters, including objectives, costs, recruitment strategy, and the provision of subsidized space as a core feature. Two, delegation of authority to the EDA CEO to make individual applicant approvals and non-discretionary declinations. Three, waiver of application fees, because this is a 3-year pilot program designed to remove barriers for international participation, and the operator's costs are already fully funded. NJ-based program includes role of operator, participant selection criteria, company evaluation and scoring, evaluation rubric, disqualifying criteria, legal requirements, communication events, program guidebook, orientation, benefits and rent limitations, and completion of the BIP. Overall, the selection process will be rigorous and transparent, using a data-driven scoring rubric and EDA oversight to ensure fairness, compliance, and alignment with the state's strategic priorities. BASE represents a strategic and cost-effective tool to strengthen New Jersey's position as a global innovation hub. With your approval today, we can move forward with implementation and begin welcoming our first international cohort to Jersey City in the coming months. Thank you.
Yeah, we've discussed this at least once, maybe twice.
Yes, I think twice.
And this is, I think this was the, is this the final step before implementation?
Yeah.
And it was to come back to approve the, effectively, the operating rules, correct?
We're essentially enabling those to make those decisions for us around who gets in, how long they stay, and all those sorts of things. So these are the parameters they will work within on our behalf.
Okay. Any comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Move it. Weinrich.
Thank you, Josh. Second?
Angelo.
Thank you, Phil. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recused, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. By the way, Rob, I apologize for calling you, Phil. I was thinking of you as a potential governor. next, we move on
thank
to
you.
Legal. Oh, thank you, Andrew.
Marcus?
Hey, everyone. Morning.
I get to be the Grinch, huh?
Too early.
By way of background, at the August 28th board meeting, 39 applicants were approved and 8 applicants were declined for not meeting the minimum score of 65. 13 applicants did meet the minimum score, but there just wasn't, no more funds available to allocate. We received 2 appeals. They are from the Asbury Park Music Foundation and the Asbury Park Arts Council.
And are those unrelated entities?
They're unrelated, yeah. The application for the Music Foundation received a score of 64, which was under the minimum score, and was declined for that reason. Their appeal focused on 2 of the scoring criteria. Question 2 relates to site use and access. They argued that they didn't have to upload any documentation at all in support. And also to question 5B, which relates to how the applicant's project will activate vacant or underutilized post-COVID space. With respect to the first question, the applicant scored 0 among all the reviewers. And all the reviewers noted that there were no supporting documentation provided. In the application, there is a text box to answer the question. And the language, if you would prefer to upload a document with your response to this question, please do so and write response and upload. So in essence, they could answer question 2 by typing it into the text box, or they could upload it. But in addition to that, question 2 requires that they upload supporting documentation to demonstrate site use and control. They read it as they didn't have to upload anything. So they, in essence, they just didn't upload anything for that question. The reviewers had nothing to look at to review. The applicant is also appealing its low score it received for question 5B, which pertains to how the applicant's project will activate vacant or underutilized post-COVID space. The applicants were awarded scores from 0 to 10. And in this case, they got a score of 0, 7, and 8. So the 0 is the outlier here. And that reviewer noted that the park was not vacant. The site for this project is in a park, and noted the park was not vacant. However, what happened was that reviewer didn't. The grant considers underutilized space as well. So the reviewer didn't consider the underutilization aspect. So in that regard, I'm recommending a remand to staff, to that reviewer, to rescore that specifically. Just that one. That one reviewer for that one question. Separately, staff is going to request delegated authority to approve this after that rescore, because even if they were to get a 10 to get a perfect score, they still wouldn't qualify, because they would meet the minimum, but then they would still be too low and wouldn't make it. So
because of the waterfall of distribution.
Yeah, there's just no more money left. So my recommendation is to uphold staff's determination on question 2. And remand the rescore for question 5B just to that one reviewer for that one score. And of course, and separately, there's a staff. They're going to need a staff delegation for that too.
And this is the Asbury Park Music Foundation one.
Yes.
Any further questions, comments? Motion to approve the recommendation. Thank you. Second.
Second, Elijah.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Second.
The second one is the Asbury Park Arts Council. Now, they received a score of 72, which was over the minimum 65, but due to the limited funding, they didn't get there. Their appeal focuses on the low score awarded to question number 2, again related to site use and access. They argued that the documents that they submitted were submission to fulfill the requirement, and that the guidance materials do not explicitly require dual signatures for site access documentation. There were 3 reviewers who scored, all 3, 0. And they all noted that there were no executed documents that they could look at. They submitted two documents. They submitted a letter of intent from the city of Asbury Park, and they submitted a letter of interest from the developer who controls the property via a 99-year lease with the city. So the letter that the developer submitted was just a letter of interest. There are no terms or conditions, or there isn't even a spot for a counter signature there. So that's why they got a zero for all of these. And the applicant argued that the guidance materials are not explicit in requiring dual signatures for site access documents, and that the applicant was only required to demonstrate the ability to use the site. However, various materials on EDA's website and the application itself identified many different types of documents that could be uploaded to demonstrate site use and control. They include leases, permits, ordinances, showing approval, letters of agreement, MOUs, letters of intent, or similar documentation between the owner of the site space and the applicant organization detailing terms of usage. That letter failed to meet that standard. That letter doesn't make any promises to the applicant. It doesn't confer any right to access, which is confirmed by the lack of detail related to terms and usage as required by the program. It simply shows the developer's interest in participating in the project should it go forward. To succeed in the appeal, the applicant must demonstrate that the authority acted arbitrarily, capriciously, or unreasonably. My recommendation is to uphold the declination that applicant failed to demonstrate adequately site use and control.
Just out of curiosity, do the applicants have recourse after this board vote?
If they would like to continue their appeal, they would be able to go to the appellate division.
4 to 5 days.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the action as recommended? Thank you, Elizabeth. Second? Thank you. Favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcus. All right, next, Jewel, can you give us a quick report on the DLRC committee meeting?
The DLRC met October 28th to review and consider one item, standalone bond for the Atlantic City Sewage Company. Staff will provide a presentation on this item as a part of today's agenda.
Thank you. Next, so the next item is the Atlantic City Sewage Company bond. Angela?
The Atlantic City Sewage Company is requesting final approval of a $9 million tax-exempt bond that will be used toward reconstruction, rehabilitation, remediation, and to upgrade and expand various sections and components of the sewer system in Atlantic City. Proceeds will also pay for the cost of issuance to fund a debt service reserve and pay interest on the bonds during construction. Total project costs are estimated at $10.1 million. At the September 10th EDA board meeting, the public hearing was held and preliminary approval received. We have current tax clearance. The applicant has been cleared by DEP and Department of Labor, and legal review has been completed with no areas of concern. The bond purchaser will be Fulton Bank. Fulton Bank provided a copy of their credit approval, which has been reviewed and found that satisfactory due diligence has been completed, and the terms and conditions of the bond are reasonable. Thank you.
Any comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second?
That's my job.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? But hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, the real estate committee report. I think in Charles's absence, Jewel, can you give us a quick recap?
Sure. The NJEDA Real Estate Committee met on October 30th to review and consider a couple of items that are proceeding to the board for action this month, including proposed real estate delivery methods, the amendment to the pilot agreement between the authority and the Township of North Brunswick for the New Jersey Bioscience Center.
Thank you. So the first item is the real estate project delivery methods. John.
Yeah, it's exciting.
We don't know whether they're going to come.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, all. As mentioned, my name is John Benigno. I'm Assistant Director of Infrastructure Team within the Real Estate Development Group. Today, I will be requesting members approve additional construction delivery methods for future real estate development projects. These methods are self-performing construction manager with or without a guaranteed maximum price, and design build with or without a guaranteed maximum price. As the members are aware, the authority's real estate team has successfully solicited, managed, and maintained several projects over the years. In 2025, this year alone, real estate has brought three separate projects to the board, totaling approximately $200 million worth of work that the team is directly administering. All of these projects and past projects have been executed using the construction manager delivery method. A 2001 board action authorized the use of the construction manager delivery method, which allows the authority to select the construction manager's services at the cost of the work plus a fee, with or without a guaranteed maximum price, referred to as GMP. Under this method, the CM solicits and subcontracts all of the construction scope associated with the project. The CM will bid this work and apply their fee unless the authority requests a GMP, which shifts cost overrun risk from the owner to the construction manager. Historically, real estate has issued project-specific requests for qualifications with a subsequent request for proposal to obtain a CM for a project. However, this process has the potential to extend the procurement timeframe, which can result in an extension of the overall development schedule. Based on recent use of the Department of Treasury's Division of Property Management and Construction CM list, the pre-qualified lists, the authority has determined to create our own pool of qualified CMs for use on future projects. A pre-qualified list offers the potentiality to expedite the development schedule for projects with significant time and funding constraints, such as the projects awarded in 2025. In the development of solicitation for the pre-qualified list, the RED team was tasked with creating a list that provided the most flexibility when delivering projects of various scopes and complexity. With this in mind, the real estate team proposes adding two additional delivery methods prior to the solicitation and for our continued use, self-performance and design build, as previously mentioned. And note that the creation of a pre-qualified list prompted the interest in adding these methods. However, once approved, the authority may also elect to engage a firm for these methods through our standard procurement procedures, the RFQ to the RFP. So the next slide, please. So provided here is a brief overview of the added methods. So first, with self-performance, the construction manager can directly perform all or a portion of the work in this method, including specialized tasks, using their own labor pool, plant, and equipment. Is likely a not to exceed percentage of work eligible for self-performance will be established for specific scopes. In this method, CMs bid all work not completed by themselves. This method can be delivered with or without a GMP. A pro of this method is streamlines the development schedule, enhances coordination between the owner and the construction manager, providing better control over work quality. Con of this method can increase the CM's liability as you're acting as a general contractor. The second method, design build. The design construction phases in this method are combined into a single design builder contract. The owner would select a construction manager who presents a design build team to complete the project from start to finish. This means the CM holds the design contract and the construction manager bids all work for the project. This method can be delivered with or without a GMP. Pro of this method, it offers streamlined processes and faster completion times due to integrated design and construction. And the owner has less control of the design process, and it reduces competition among contractors, which could lead to higher costs. So now the question may be, with multiple delivery methods for our use, how will the authority select which method to use for a specific project? So prior to implementation, real estate team must internally select which delivery method will be utilized for a specific scope of work. Our team is currently developing a standard operating procedure for this selection, present that to the executive committee for approval prior to using these additional delivery methods. The SOP will require a project manager to develop justification for the use of a specific delivery method for the scope they manage, and the real estate team will have a minimum of 3 internal staff determined by the VP of real estate, rank the delivery methods against established criteria that include project complexity, budget, development schedule, risks and exposures, and any special intrinsic project considerations. This concludes my request, and happy to take any questions from the members.
What you're really asking for here is additional methods or forms in to evaluate when you select a project manager.
That's correct. We're going to add these methods to add to our repertoire so that if we want to deliver a project and the scope dictates that these methods may warrant that, we'll have the ability, you know, flexibility to use these other methods.
And then do you go to the executive committee? Does it eventually come to the board to determine which? Is it all wrapped up in the sort of board approval of the project?
So for that particular project, after we've done that internal, we'll present to the board. We're also asking for, you know, comprehensive budget approval or CML awarding.
We've grown quite a bench of expertise and capacity to deliver projects, and so this gives the team the flexibility in the future if other projects arise to be as creative as we need to be to get the project done. But yeah, the board would have full transparency into how those particular projects are going.
Yeah. Any comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Go hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the recommendation? Thank you. Second?
Second, Fred Dumont.
Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions?
Aye.
Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you, John. And next, Brian on the NJ Bioscience Center amendment to pilot and other matters.
Good morning, Brian Keenan. This is our 9th amendment to the pilot at NJBC, which is a property the EDA owns in North Brunswick. And we are here to ask for your approval of the amendment to the 9th pilot, which actually reduces our tax payment slightly due to a reduction in the amendment. This will take effect in January and go through December 2030. It's pretty straightforward.
Is this an agreement with the township?
Yeah, the township, that's correct.
And it's already been agreed.
It's already been agreed to by the township.
Any questions or comments? Hearing none, could we hear a motion to approve? Second?
Well, you got it. Elijah, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you, Brian. Tim, board memoranda.
Going to bring this in with a minute or two to spare on the 12 o'clock call time, so pretty excited about that. We have a couple of delegated authority memos to come back. I don't have to take any questions on it. We're meeting with them in person right now.
Anyone else, any comments, questions, or business to bring before the board? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to adjourn?
I can.
Thank you, Jewel. Second. To Elizabeth, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is, that's right, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all, and have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Have a happy
Christmas.
I know. We're not doing it.
No confidence, but you're going to be here so long.
And for using Verizon conferencing services, you may now disconnect.